This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Don't Quote Me. I'm your host, Orla Condon, and this week I'm joined by journalist Sydney Yates, who, like myself, adores all things reality TV and pop culture, writing for some of the UK's biggest publishers, including Metro UK. Coming up on today's show, I'm a Celebrity 2022 is getting everybody talking. Jennifer Aniston speaks out about IVF troubles in tell-all interview. And as The Crown returns for season 5, we're discussing the Netflix show that blends fact and fiction. In other news, I'm unashamedly discussing my early Christmas prep. Sydney is discussing her love of Netflix's new reality show, Buying Beverly Hills, while you guys are sharing who would be your dream I'm a Celeb catmates. Let's get stuck in. Okay, guys, last week we had a heavy one. We had some stories we needed to cover. It was a bit of a slog. You stuck in there with us. I appreciate it. Feel like we're going to have a little bit more of a fun chat today. Very excited to talk about our first topic. But first, introducing our lovely guest, entertainment journalist with the Metro, Sydney Yates. We have had a bit of a social media link ever since you wrote a piece for all the Love Island fans who listen to My Bottom Paper. And I know the majority of you are that. Sydney, you wrote a piece last summer, 2021, I believe. And it was after the comments were made about LGBTQ plus inclusion in Love Island and the logistically difficult comments. And you and one of your colleagues did a bit of a deep dive into this topic and why that was such a bullshit excuse from ITV and why it was disappointing for long-term fans like me and yourself. And I remember just reading the piece and I was like, oh, I need to get her on My Pot and Paper. We couldn't make it work because of conflicts and timing and all that. But we've dragged you in here. So we'll get a bit of chat in. But yeah, that was just to talk about that briefly. Ooh. That was a really interesting, and I find that discussion in general about Love Island really, really interesting, because as a gay woman myself, as much as I would love to see myself represented in reality TV and that space because I adore it, I am incredibly nervous of a show like Love Island trying to represent me and even the bigger minority groups that face further backlash, like people who identify as transgender or gender fluid. And it makes me incredibly nervous.
Yeah, I agree with you there 100%. I feel though, it's just, It's lazy from ITV that they haven't even made or attempted to make the step in the right direction.
The piece is, I presume, still on the Metro for anyone who wants to read it. I will link it in the show notes. It's a really interesting, it's from last year, but it very much still applies. I'll put it in the show notes so people can have a read. But let's get on to our first chat, which I'm excited about because I know you've been writing about it a lot over the last week, as I can imagine. There's a lot of content here. Which again must be a relief after the last couple of years of I'm a Celebrity being really shit. Like it's been bad.
So boring. I'm sorry. I hated Wales. I really did. It's not the same, is it?
Like, I also, do you know what? I kind of feel bad as well for the celebs who signed up. Like, I know there was some of them who did it because they were like, oh, it's logistically easier for me to just go to Wales because I have kids or whatever reason that was. Mm. But I'd be like, I was really shortchanged. I got a really shit series. Like, it's really just jumped back up again immediately. Yeah. Like, it's just a different show.
Oh, it really is. I mean, I am angry though at you. I'm angry.
So, Let's cover the Olivia Atwood stuff first before we get into, because I'm really interested to hear your take on this. But yeah, so the first kind of big story that came out, obviously before it started, we heard the lineup, and then we heard that Sean Walsh and Matt Hancock would be joining late, which obviously caused a lot of controversy, a lot of debate about whether it was the place for someone like Matt Hancock, given his history. But in the early episodes, Olivia Atwood, who I was extremely excited about seeing on this show, I think she's brilliant TV. She's great in reality TV. She's super smart, super witty, really clued in. And I feel like she would have been such a good feisty energy just to get things going. She had to withdraw with, I think it was like just after 24 hours. And it was these reports that it was on medical grounds. And then there was all these kind of whispers about what that could mean. They were keeping it very hush hush. There was people suggesting that maybe she was pregnant. Was it this, that, and the other? Thankfully, she has come out with an interview where she's kind of clarified what those first few days looked like. And she said that a blood test found that she was dangerously anemic, which is interesting, I guess, because all of the Islanders go through these medical kind of tests before they go in. So it makes you question how she got as far as she did, only to be pulled out, because she seemed to be a huge fan of the show who really wanted to take part, like was excited to take part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly that. It was quite, I don't know whether there's a bit of a conspiracy going on. It was really weird. And she said, yeah, that she was randomly given or pulled out to have this blood test, taken to hospital.
Yeah.
And actually the hospital said her bloods, well, didn't they say that her bloods were fine eventually? But it was the medics at ITV who said that she was dangerously anemic. So something's not adding up.
So she said in her quotes to the Daily Mail, she said, nobody could give me an answer with what was wrong. They just told me that I had to get to a hospital immediately. The results were really, really low when they put them into the reader and they consulted with another doctor offsite. I had those bloods done in England before I left and they were fine. I was confused and obviously very, very worried. And then she said, that it was fine then afterwards in another check. And then you would ask the question, you know, like, do ITV have stricter standards than a hospital does? Potentially, like that could be the case.
Yeah, who knows at this point? I'm just really upset that she's not on the show. And there was such a kind of confusion as to why she was taken out and, you know, all the rumours and everything going around.
Yeah.
Yeah,
especially given that they didn't really reference it, like the campmates didn't reference it really at all, which seemed really weird.
Yeah, you would have thought even on like Love Island when they get rid of a contestant or someone's had to be removed from the villa, for example, there's normally some sort of exit narrative, right? So then they normally either have contestants go to the beach hut and talk about why they've gone. And yeah, it was really weird that it was like Anton Deck just gave a kind of speech at the beginning of the show, one of the episodes last week, saying that she'd gone, and that was it. They were like, oh, she's going to appear in a certain trial because she's filmed up until her exit, and then it's like she was never even on the show. She's still in the credits, but they
It was a bit like the Try Guys statement, wasn't it? Like, we've tried to remove her as much as possible, yeah, but she will appear in certain scenes.
Exactly. Oh, it's
so strange.
It's devastating. I was so ready for her to go on the attack. I'd predicted this. I had it all in my head that she was going to, you know, give Matt Hancock, you know, run for his money, grill him, or whatever, go to town on him, tear him to pieces. Devastating.
And she would have been a really well-placed person to do that, because I think there would have been an immediate dismissal by Manny about her intelligence. And I say that that is something that she is used to in a lot of rooms. We see this all the time with reality stars when they go on these spaces. There is a presumption of a lack of intelligence. And I think she would have been well-armed with a baton to beat him with. And I think it would have taken a lot of people by surprise. And I mean, I would have, I'm paying the TV license to see that. You know what I mean? Like, I want to see that. Exactly. I want to see that.
I was so ready. I had the popcorn ready. I was ready for her to go to town. And I really hope that ITV bring her back next year. Or
yeah, surely they will, right? Like, who was it? I think of like Jamie Lang on Strictly when he couldn't do it because of injury. And then they brought, like, surely...
Yeah,
surely.
Exactly. Although you say that, I think Craig Charles was on I'm a Celebrity. This must have, it's years ago. And he left after, I think it was a day or two, because of a bereavement. And I don't know whether he was invited to go on it again.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I really hope that, you know, ITV extend the favour, but I don't know whether... that bridge has been burned. I don't know the ins and outs of how it all...
I guess I'm optimistic, given obviously she did that docu-series with ITV about the sex industry, and that went really well, and she's spoken about like working on further projects with ITV. So potentially if she stays within the roster of kind of ITV talent, then it's like a good incentive for them to get her back on there. But I get what you're saying. 12 months, what controversy could come out that might ruin, jeopardize her chances?
I know. Well, I got my fingers crossed. I think she's brilliant TV. And I think out of all the Love Islanders that we've had over the past few years, she is number one, I think, to be on a show like I'm a Celebrity. She really is.
I feel like if I was to pick anyone else to go in, it would be someone from that series. I don't think I could have any more recent Islander go in there. I'd need like a like a Chris or a Kim or Camilla or someone. You kind of want someone from that generation 100%. Of Islanders.
Yeah, 100%. I'm keeping my fingers crossed that she makes comeback.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, look, we held out hope that she will be the one to grill Matt Hancock. He's not been spared from it, but he's definitely getting a soft launch out there. It was hugely controversial when this was announced that Matt Hancock was going in. Former health secretary during the pandemic caught breaking his own, not rules, but guidelines, as he reiterated on a recent episode. He was caught having an affair outside of his marriage to Martha Hancock, I believe is her name, and then had to resign. And he has kind of worn that resignation as somewhat of a badge of honor in recent episodes, kind of saying like, oh, well, look, I took responsibility. It's like, pal, you didn't have a fucking choice. Like, you had no choice. You were out on your ear. Obviously, I'm a newish resident of the UK. I lived through COVID in Ireland, so I feel like I don't have as raw hatred, I feel it's fair to say, for Matt Hancock. As someone who has been through COVID here in the UK, who lived under his guidelines or rules or whatever you want to call them, what do you make of this, both personally and like as a PR move for him?
I think it's outrageous. Like I said before, I'm so angry that he's on this show. I'm really angry for like the people who were impacted by his decisions during lockdown, who were looking forward to watching I'm a Celebrity as a little bit of escapism, and then having to be forced to watch him on this program. It's kind of mad that ITV booked him in the first place. I think it's mad that he's accepted it. It's mad that he's getting paid £400,000 for the pleasure of going on it.
Yeah.
It's mad that he's a sitting MP and he has constituents at home who need his help getting through a cost of living crisis.
Yeah.
There are so many things wrong with this booking. And it's just frustrating seeing that he's literally been handed a redemption arc on a plate, essentially.
Yeah. It has been. I mean, when it was announced he was going in, he lost the Tory party whip. If you don't mind, would you be able to kind of explain what that might mean? A lot of our listeners are Irish. Would you like, it's a role that he's not elected into, right? It's given to him by the party. So that is a role that they can take away, right? But he obviously can't be removed as an MP because he's a publicly elected official.
Yeah, you've basically nailed that, I think.
Oh, brilliant.
To my understanding.
Yeah.
I think that's it.
So yeah, he's kind of lost all of his extra privileges within the Tory party, is kind of my understanding of what it meant.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
He is still, like you say, a representative for an area of the UK, and now he is not there. The show is 3 weeks, right? Like three and a half weeks.
Three and a half weeks.
And like you say, I mean, the news cycle here is pretty much constantly, we are going into, if not already in, a recession. And I mean, my mum is over from Ireland this weekend, and I'm like, is Ireland in a recession? Like, what? Have I made a mistake? And she's like, it's not as bad, I have to say. Like, here it's like, strap in, folks, because things are going to get pretty fucking rocky. And it's really interesting to see people like Charlene, who I really expected to kind of go hard on him. And like, you can't put the responsibility on the campmates either, right? Like, it's a really shit situation for them to be in as well.
Oh, it's horrible, isn't it? Because you have this expectation that, you know, you're going into this show and, you know, you're going to have some personalities that you might not get on with, but you know what? You kind of roll with it. You get over it, whatever. But then you have someone like Matt Hancock come in, who is such a controversial figure, who has been such a massive character in all of our lives over the past 2 years, to kind of come in. How the hell do you navigate that situation? But also, they're on TV as well. There are cameras rolling 24/7. So I guess also another concern that they'll have in the back of their minds is how am I coming across?
Yeah, how am I going to be received? And then on both sides of that, if I come down too hard, or also if I give him a pass, what is that going to do? And we see people like Chris Moyles kind of finding it hard. And Chris Moyles is coming across as, I don't want to say calculating, because I think that sounds like quite like a villain, but I think he is very, very aware of his status as like the king of breakfast radio, but that he is now in a very different audience category, and he is probably being exposed to a lot of people for the first time. And I think he is very aware of the fact that he has a reputation that could be damaged by the show. And I think it's really interesting to see him struggle with Matt breaking down those barriers with some people who had a real problem, like Sue Cleaver, who plays Eileen on Carrie, Charlene, like I said, who people will know from Loose Women and ITV News. And I mean, Matt was getting hugs from them last night on the show because he said he really regretted everything he did and he's looking for forgiveness, and they're all, it's so human of him. He's so human. And Chris Moyles is like, I'm just not fucking buying it. Like, it's really interesting to watch.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the fallout. I think something's going to have to give with Chris Moyles, because you can't hold on to these feelings. You know, you have to kind of let them out somehow. And I feel that we haven't seen yet him kind of air these feelings of confliction to him.
Yeah. And I think someone like Boy George will only be too ready to add to that kind of chorus when Chris Moyles does decide to say, actually, Matt.
Yeah, he'll like, be over there rubbing his hands and getting ready to kind of
like, we're not mates.
Drop a couple of bombs and walk off.
I find it really interesting as well that, like, obviously we saw Babatunde ask him about the affair and him being caught red-handed, I think, in his office, like, shifting, making out with Gina Colangelo, I want to say her name is. Not his wife, is what you need to know. He was caught having a very passionate embrace, fully hands-on ass action. And Babatunde is fully like, you were grabbing her arse. Like, you were absolutely feeling her up. Like, what the fuck? And I kind of love that people like Babatunde have the permission to ask this question, and there's not going to be a producer on whatever, you know, BBC Newsnight or whatever it might be, or a PR handler pulling him out, that he has to sit there and listen to Babatunde say, you were grabbing her booty.
That was brilliant, wasn't it?
So good.
So needed. But at the same time, yeah, you're completely right. All these campmates have these questions that they need answering, just like the rest of us.
Yeah.
And I think it was really funny that it was coming from Babatunde, and, you know, he wasn't holding back.
Yeah.
He was saying exactly what we were all thinking.
And he can get away, I think, as the, like, the local comedian in camp.
100%.
He has that, I feel like, you know, if journalist Charlene did ask, it's a different energy. Like, yeah. Obviously she probably wouldn't have put it like that as well, but it's like a different energy, and it comes across as more of a grilling. Whereas I think Babatunde was really able to kind of slip in under the radar a little bit and be like, come on, yes. Let's talk about it.
Exactly that. I think, yeah, there was a kind of almost, I think as a comedian, like you said, as a comedian, you're able to get away with asking those particular questions in a particular way and getting a particular answer.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't have got that from Charlene, like you said.
What do you think about his exit from this? I know, like, Chris Moyles was asking, you know, what's the plan after this? And Matt was kind of, I don't think he was doing like a publicity push for the book, but I think he was like, oh, this is a handy little way for me to drop in that my book is coming and that I'm going to talk all about it. And it's like, what's the plan? Because this was obviously, this is not like a quick decision that was made. This was a conversation between his people and ITV, probably for a while. And I mean, he's getting reportedly £400,000. That's a figure that would have taken a while to settle on. This is a plan, and it's a part of a longer term plan. What do you think he does from here? Like, does he continue to be an MP or go for election or re-election again, whenever that is? And like, does he continue to stay in that space? Or do you think this is his pivot into kind of a, you know, like a political mouthpiece that'll do TED Talks and all this kind of shite and get paid to talk at corporate events and all that kind of, like, is this the pivot?
I'm really worried that it is the pivot. I really am. I think what we're going to see from him next is more television appearances. I feel like he's not going to go away quietly.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, what big brands are going to sign him after he leaves the jungle, whether he leaves the jungle last, or whether he is miraculously crowned king of the jungle, which I don't even want to think about. But I mean, we'll probably see him at the red carpet, on the red carpet to the NTAs next year.
Yeah.
You know, he's probably going to be picking up television appearances. We're going to see him more on television. Will he get his own ITV spin-off show?
Imagine. Oh my God.
Yeah, so this is my feeling.
He has all of these campmates now who are going to be kind of friendly with him, which you can't blame them for either. And that's in that situation. Like Sue said, like, at some point you have to say, either I park it and try and get on with this guy, or it's going to just be my frustration to live with. They're going to be kind of his PR champions as well when they come out of this, because everyone is going to be asking. I mean, if you got interview time with Boy George, you would be saying, like, what was it like sitting in the camp with Matt Hancock? Like, what was that like? And they're going to say, oh, he's a nice guy. And he says that, like, he has all these little soldiers now going out to add to this echo chamber of, oh, but he's a lovely guy and people make mistakes, which is the narrative that they're very much peddling.
That is 100% the narrative. And I just think that I'm a Celebrity, unfortunately, is just the beginning. I feel like this is the redemption arc he wanted. You know, he was asking his campmates, well, telling his campmates all he wants is forgiveness. They've given him forgiveness to some extent.
Yeah.
I worry that viewers are also going to be swayed by this narrative that ITV have given him. You know, I think he's seeking out a career in television, and I think he's going to be all plastered all over our screens. This is just the beginning, and this is like some twisted Black Mirror. to be honest.
Like, this, the 2022 bingo card is just getting wilder and wilder and wilder. I'm like, what universe are we in?
It really is. Like, there's no stopping him, I think, at the moment. I mean, he's already on his fifth Bush Tucker trial.
Yeah.
And I think, oh my God, how did we get here?
How did we get here? And ITV are coming out of this pretty unscathed, like in all the conversations, and we're seeing it on ITV Network, like we're seeing it on This Morning, we're seeing it on Loose Women, we're seeing all of their roster of talk shows, including this debate about, is it right that Matt Hancock is on I'm a Celebrity? The network, like the show that this network. So it's really interesting to see them. I mean, everyone saw the clip of Toph on This Morning. I think it was like going around on TikTok of her kind of saying that this is the most embarrassing thing she has ever witnessed from the Tory party. And I think it's really interesting to hear her say that on This Morning on ITV, a channel that is paying this man 400,000. Like, why is there not this conversation about the ITV responsibility as well? And then it just always boils down to views and to clicks, and they're getting all of it based off Matt Hancock. Like, have you written a story about I'm a Celeb? Maybe 1 out of 10 is not about Matt Hancock, I would imagine, right? Like, they're all...
Oh, they're all about him.
Yeah.
It's all about him. It's the best PR ITV could have ever asked for. And him as well. There's no such thing as bad press.
I mean, you definitely hit bottom, and then you're like, it's all up from here.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's... Oh, it's just really, really frustrating. And yeah, like I was saying, he's been voted to do his fifth Bush Tucker trial tonight. And initially, what I thought when he was going into the jungle, there was so much backlash. People were signing petitions.
Yeah.
Lots of people were angry. And I thought, oh, you know what? Maybe people will watch him do one trial and kind of get something out of it, you know, and that will be it. But no, people are wanting to see more of him, to take on more of the trials, get him more airtime.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know.
And I think as well, like, even, I mean, he's handling the trials really well. He's doing really well in the trials. They don't seem to faze him very much. The eating trial, which is usually a hugely controversial, Twitter is hopping, was very, very bland this year because himself and Boy George just did so well. It's also interesting that most of the challenges that are coming up now, and I should say as well, as we're recording this, it's Sunday night, so there will be another 2 episodes of I'm a Celeb by the time you're listening to this, but also that all of the trials are now becoming two-handers, because obviously ITV are kind of thinking, we need the audience to get to know some other people other than Matt, because right now he is the person I know most about out of this entire group, because he's just on the screen all the time.
Yeah, it's literally the Matt Hancock show at the moment.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to backfire on ITV because that's all viewers are seeing right now. And it's so boring. Like, it is
a bit boring.
Kind of interesting seeing him do the first one. But, you know, I was so angry that he was even on my screen in the first place. But now it's the fifth one. It's like, come on, can we please start voting for other celebrities? They're probably sick of it as well. I mean...
It's boredom as well. Like, we hear that all the time from managers when they come out, or campmates when they come out, that they're just so bored. So, like, I'd love to just do something disgusting for a couple of hours just to give me something to do and feel like I did something with my day.
Exactly.
And also, like, if I was Sean Walsh, I'd be pretty happy that I was walking in with Matt Hancock, because, can you give a brief recap on Sean Walsh and why he is there, other than the fact that he's like a mildly known comedian?
Well, so Sean Walsh was on Strictly Come Dancing in 2018, and he was partnered with Katia Jones, who was married to fellow professional dancer Neil Jones,
who was also on the show, right?
Who was also on the show. I don't know whether he was matched up with a celebrity at that time, but he was also a part of Strictly. And Sean Walsh basically got caught kissing Katia on a night out, while also being in a relationship with a long-time girlfriend, Rebecca Humphreys. And so he was obviously the main talking point at that time on Strictly. He went and did an apology. Both him and Katia, you know, did an apology. He broke up with his girlfriend, who wrote a really, really scathing statement revealing that he cheated on her birthday.
Yeah. And there was a lot of talk about his controlling behavior as well at the time, I remember, right? Like she really seemed to insinuate that it was a very toxic relationship and that this was kind of the final straw of public humiliation for her.
Yeah.
And again, like, I mean, I remember working the entertainment desk at that time and covering, and this was like, again, a rolling story that people were just like so interested in. And then when she was adding this context to what kind of life as her, well, her perspective of what he is like as a partner. And he then was asked about this. I think Sue asked him about this in camp. And again, kind of spoke about, you know, she kind of said, and she obviously kind of had a vague understanding that something controversial had happened. He kind of recapped it and he said, you know, to be totally honest with you, my poor ex-girlfriend at the time posted this statement and that was the end of me. And that twigged with me because I just remember writing about the letter that she had written.
Yeah.
And very much this insinuation that it was a toxic. And other kind of mildly famous people were commenting and kind of saying, you know, we stand with Rebecca Humphreys and this is really upsetting to hear this. And, you know, cheating is bad, but this other stuff is actually the real problem. Like, you know, him getting caught kissing Katya was obviously shitty behavior. Mm-hmm. But the other stuff was kind of the darker stuff that people were like, we should be more concerned about this.
Yeah.
And it's been totally just like glazed over. Like he told this story as if like, oh, I got caught with my hands in my pants and it was really embarrassing for everyone. It's like, pal, there was so much more to this story than you're telling us.
Exactly. I know. And he was only speaking to Sue for what, 2-3 minutes? And that was it. And it's not been brought up since. It probably won't be brought up again. And that was it. You had Sean talking about that. You had Matt Hancock talking about his affair in one episode. And I think it's just going to be parked now and everything's going to move on.
Everything's going to, And with that, we're moving on because we have some other stories to talk about. This week, Jennifer Aniston was in the headlines. She did an interview, cover story with Allure. People will probably draw images to their mind of her with a little Chanel bikini. She's got the really long stenos in. Like, I'm thinking like 02, 03 Friends when Rachel had the really long hair and she was dating Bruce Willis on the show. Like, she looked amazing. She looked absolutely divine. She spoke about a lot of things that, not that she's not spoken about before, but I guess it was probably the most honest, the most transparent she has been about these issues. And the one that caught the attention of most people was her fertility struggles, which again is frustrating and ironic because she has been trying to escape this narrative, I suppose, for decades. But I guess this was her kind of taking ownership of this story and what the lived experience of this was. I mean, I personally remember like being a teenager throughout the noughties and like kind of starting to absorb so much celebrity culture and, you know, entertainment sites and magazines, and really like it all came at us in the early noughties and into the early 10s. And every headline was about the fact that this is her age and she still doesn't have kids. Brad left her for Angelina because she couldn't give him a baby. You know, Justin Theroux is going to leave her as well for the same reason. Everyone leaves her. It was all this thing about how she was just this like barren woman who couldn't give all of these desirable men children. And eventually they would leave as a result. Like, it was horrific. It was horrific. Mm-hmm. And she spoke about it in this interview, about struggling with IVF, about that part of her life, about the relationships that she went through during those struggles. And I just found it really, really surprising actually that she chose to kind of speak about it now when there wasn't any pressure. I feel like she's kind of past that hump and past that hurdle. What, like, it's interesting, right, that she's come out and she's spoken about this.
I did feel like it kind of came from nowhere, but I guess, you know, deep inside her, she had to kind of put ownership on this story and tell it how it is. And I just found it really heartbreaking. You know, like you said, there's always been this kind of gross intrusion and immense speculation about her relationships, about her desire to have children. Does she want children? Is she putting her career first? Like, and this is, like you said, it stemmed back to Brad Pitt when she was in a relationship, married to Brad Pitt, and then they divorced. And it was all this speculation as to why they ended things. And this kind of whole narrative has just followed her throughout her career. Yeah, and it's really sad. And she has spoken before about wanting to start a family and wanting to have children and wanting to have it all, really, have the amazing career in television and film and also become a mum. So I found it really sad to read.
Yeah. Some of the stuff that she said in the interview, she said, "I was trying to get pregnant. It was a challenging road for me, that baby making road. All the years and years of speculation, it was super hard. I was going through IVF, drinking Chinese teas, you name it. I was throwing everything at it. I would have given anything if someone had said to me, freeze your eggs, do yourself a favor, but you just don't think about it. So here I am today, the ship has sailed. I actually feel a little relief now because there is no more, can I, maybe. I don't have to think about that anymore. That chapter is closed." And it's just so sad for someone, if they want to have kids and that's something that they're trying to have, and maybe it's not coming at a time that's ideal and that they're not really kind of aware of those options or being advised to take those options, and it just doesn't happen. And then it gets to a point where that door is closed, and doing and experiencing that anyway as just a regular person, but to experience that in front of this constant narrative that she's, like you say, choosing her career above having kids or above her partner, and that her partners are then saying, "Well, I want children." And it's just awful to think of someone struggling with that and this whole public persona being, "Oh, but she's too career focused and she's heartless. She doesn't want kids."
Oh, it must have been so difficult and so hard to navigate that struggle against endless, it was literally endless speculation over the years. Yeah. I just don't know how she handled it, really.
And also, it's just so, I find this stuff so weird because, again, working in the spaces that we do, you would never write, like, we see these stories all the time, right? Like Khloe Kardashian or Kourtney Kardashian puts up a picture where there's the slightest shadow under her tummy, and straight away there are places that write, you know, and they go behind the guise of, you know, fans suspect and fans believe, because they'll find a couple of tweets that say Kourtney must be pregnant or this, and that'll be the excuse that they will give for writing these stories. Well, someone else said it. We're just reporting on what someone else said, and that's how the stories go. And it's that's where the culture is now versus outlets having the gall kind of 10, 15 years ago to say, look at this and like zoom in on this little pooch and like, this is the baby, right? Like this has to be the baby. Whereas now it's like, well, their fans are saying, and all the comments on our Instagram is asking, so we can report. We're not far away. We're definitely better, but we're not far away from that space.
No, so I think we've still got a long way to go. It's just heartbreaking. It shouldn't have to be like that for any celebrity or anyone going through any you know, fertility journey.
Yeah.
Really. Or and for any people, female celebrity, actually.
Yeah. And for people who don't want to have kids and want to focus on, and that's not something that they want, that to be weaponized against them. And you know, that used to make them feel like they are less than, or, you know, it's bizarre. Brad Pitt and Justin Theroux have responded through various mediums. A spokesperson for Brad Pitt, or a source, I believe, actually responded via Hollywood Life. They said, "Brad respects Jennifer's decision to come clean about her struggles with infertility. The two of them have had their ups and downs, and they are very much friends today." Come clean about her struggles with fertility, I thought was a really interesting phrasing.
Yeah, that doesn't sit well with me,
doesn't it? Like,
it shouldn't have to be like, oh, she admits, or like she comes clean,
like she was keeping a lie, and it's like, it's a private life, like she was entitled to keep that private. Like, I thought that was really, and look, we can all, I mean, people will probably say as they listen to this, like, you're being too, you know, you're reading too much into it. No, I don't know, these sources go over these comments and like they're very deliberately written. These are not, you know, people who are caught on the hop for a comment. This is usually something that has been drafted.
It's a bit icky.
While Justin Theroux just responded with a fist pump and a heart emoji on her Instagram, which
I thought that was really nice. I thought it was nice seeing her be so supported for that interview. And you had the likes of Kaley Cuoco as well kind of coming out and voicing support. And I think last week it was just a big week for fertility stories as well. You had Rebel Wilson coming out and revealing that she's had a baby daughter via surrogacy.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, 2 days later, you've got Jennifer Aniston talking about her IVF struggles. So it was a big week.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, it just reminds me of that kind of sad culture, and then reminds me that we're so still there. Like, it's just wrapped in a slightly different bow, but it's still quite similar, the discussion points around these stories. It also just reminds me that, like, Jennifer Aniston has crazy good relationships with her exes. Like,
she does, doesn't she?
So we spoke to, I don't know if you're a Married at First Sight fan, but yes. So we spoke to Ella Ding from the Australian version of the show a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, I haven't watched the Australian one.
Oh, get on Australia. It's so good. It's so good. But she spoke about being friends with her husband from the show and that she likes to stay friends. And I was like, that's fucking insane to me. Why would you want that in your life? And how do you do that? And here Jennifer Aniston as well. Like, I mean, maybe it's a happier life. Maybe it's a happier life to not have that.
Maybe. I don't want to find out though.
I'm not interested in testing theory, yeah. But like, respect. I mean, respect. Okay, it's been a big week in telly this week. Full disclosure, I am not finished this yet. Mm-hmm. So for the sake of this, I am aware of some, I can't say they're spoilers because they're historically in the books, right? But The Crown season 5, are you a Crown fan? I presume you are.
Oh, no, not really. I hadn't. I know, spoiler alert. I had only seen bits and bobs of The Crown before series 5 came out. And then series 5 came out. And I got to see the preview episodes, so the first 4 episodes.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, this era, I think, is just brilliant. I think even if I hadn't had those previews, I would have tuned in anyway.
Yeah.
Because it's just such a fascinating time. Like, you've got so much going on. You've got the Martin Bashir interview. You've got the Diana tapes.
Yeah.
You've got the impending Diana and Charles divorce. You've also, I don't know how far in you are.
Spoil it, because it's all real.
Okay. You've got Prince Andrew going to the Queen, telling her that Fergie's had her toes sucked. So, like, it has everything.
It's for all the family. Everyone can join in. I think because we all have, like, a general awareness of some of the, like, for our age group, this is the series that we have touch points that we can kind of remember. I mean, like, I was born in the early 90s, so most of this is not stuff that I actively remember watching on TV, but I remember learning about it kind of in the kind of decade afterwards as it being very recent kind of news. So I guess it's interesting to see it play out. And I think that's actually what's quite nice about The Crown, is because there is this turnover of cast every 2 seasons, and there is a very specific time frame that they're dealing with, you really can watch it in silo. You can watch one series and be like, I've consumed kind of the early 90s and that period, and you can kind of drift. Personally, I started watching the Olivia Colman season 3, and I was gonna do that, and I loved it so much that I was like, oh, I kind of want to go back now and watch the Claire Foy seasons, which I did. So I kind of watched 3 and 4 and then 1 and 2, and now I'm watching 5. So, like, definitely not in the desired order, but it's a show that really allows viewers to kind of pick and choose what they want to dive into, doesn't it?
Totally. And that's, I think, its appeal as well. I mean, this series, yeah, I need to finish it, but the first couple of episodes I really loved. It's had a bit of I don't think it's been very well received compared to previous seasons.
Why do you think that is? Is it just the climate? Is it just how recent the death of Queen Elizabeth is? Is it the nostalgia for the old cast? Like, what do you think is just not clicking for people?
I have seen people tweet saying they're kind of disappointed that the storylines have kind of felt a little bit flat, given the kind of gravity of what they're actually dealing with in terms of the period that we're in. I think they just feel a little bit underwhelmed with how it's all been put together.
Is that a safety thing for Netflix? Like,
that's a very good point. Yeah.
Like, I mean, we've seen reports this weekend that Prince Philip looked into suing Netflix and the options and the legal options he had available to him after season two, I believe it was, where the series seemed to blame him for the death of his sister, Princess Cecile, or Cecily, I think it was actually. Mm-hmm. For people who remember that season, it was when we saw Prince Philip at school and he was having a tough time. His sister had to fly back to London to see him, I think. And it showed that she was pregnant and she was with her husband and her kids, I think. And she died on that plane. And the insinuation was very much in the show that it was Philip's fault that she was flying back to the UK. And we're now learning that he looked into his legal options against Netflix for the series. Now, obviously, as we know it, he didn't pursue that. I mean, we've not heard about any, you know, verified legal action taken. But it is, I guess, interesting to think about how Netflix navigates the climate at the minute. I mean, pre-Elizabeth's death, they could have gotten away with a little bit. And I think now, since she's died, there's very much this idea of we're still in that period of respect. And I think you get into an interesting conversation then, because this show has blurred fact and fiction for its entire run. Like, it's not a documentary.
Exactly. And then, you know, it is a dramatized version of events.
Yeah.
But I mean, there has been many a time where they've kind of fallen into trouble and, you know, have had these reactions and responses from the likes of Buckingham Palace, for example,
yeah.
Only recently, before Series 5 was released, you know, voicing these concerns about how the king is going to be portrayed in the episodes, and they're worried about his reputation. You kind of look forward, if you look towards Series 6, which they're filming at the moment,
yeah,
another big, big area of contention is Princess Diana's death.
I've read this. So what is it? What is it? The scene that people are concerned about?
So they have filmed not her death, but the lead up to the death, and they've filmed scenes going towards the car going towards the tunnel, and so they filmed that in Paris and in Barcelona, and I mean, that is surely a step too far, isn't it?
I suppose it's interesting because it did happen. Like, it is reality. And I guess you get into that morality space of, you know, and again, this is echoed across so many genres of TV and documentary and, you know, fact or fiction, telly, whatever it might be. Of, you know, it is the reality. Do we document the horrors of that reality, of the press reportedly going into the tunnel after the accident, taking pictures of her body as she was dying? Like, do we go into the sensitivities of that because it happened and it's reported to have happened? Or do we take the moral high ground and say, yo, it was bad enough that that happened then, so we're not going to do it now? And I think of this all the time when it comes to like Britney Spears documentaries. And like Amy Winehouse documentaries, you know, these women who have been monetized on their whole careers and their lives have been picked apart for entertainment their whole careers. And then this documentary comes in aiming to tell the story of the injustice of that, but they are also making money off of their lives. And I think that's the really interesting sounds a bit soulless, because obviously there's a life lost here and two boys who lost their mom and all that kind of stuff. But I guess it's that line. And especially now that Elizabeth has died, I guess I would imagine producers are having that conversation of, you know, how sensationalist do we want to get? We want this to be a headline making show. We want this to lean into the scandals and the controversies of this family, whether you love them or hate them. But where do we stand on that? Like, I wouldn't want to be making the call. I wouldn't want to be making the call.
No, me neither. Me neither. It seems like a difficult. It's a difficult job to like know where to draw the line.
Yeah, Interest. I haven't seen it all. Like I said, I've seen the first two episodes, I believe. So I'm. These are, again, they're not spoilers. They happened. Well, most of them happened. Yeah. This might be dramatized, but some of the mistruths from season five to people who are watching, I'm going to read out some now. They have not impacted spoilers for me. Are you good, Sydney, for me to read through these?
Yeah, go for them. Okay. Yeah.
So Charles's plot to get the Queen to abdicate is not depicted truthfully. Prince Philip warning Princess Diana over the tell-all book, not truthfully depicted. Muhammad al-Fayed seeing the Duke of Windsor in Egypt in 1946 means fucking nothing to me because I haven't seen it, but apparently not as it happened. The Queen shed tears before giving her famous anus horrible speech. British listeners will know what that is more than Irish listeners. No idea what that means. Queen and Prince Philip embrace in the ruins of Windsor Castle. Apparently not fully truthful. Diana told the Queen about the Panorama interview, apparently not fully truthful. Diana's comment on being future Queen and John Major acting as an intermediary in Charles and Diana's divorce. So apparently all of those stories as they're depicted in The Crown is not shocking. It's not how it went down in reality. So let's not absorb this show as like a, yeah, as a documentary retelling these points in the royal family's lives. Judi Dench has come out and made a statement. Have you seen this? She has.
Oh, yes. She hates The Crown.
She hates The Crown, right? She really doesn't like the show. She has called on Netflix to add a disclaimer to the opening of every episode, alerting viewers that the fact is that the series is a fictionalized drama. She had issues with two scenes in particular. One was the scene in the first episode, I believe, where Charles is speaking with then Prime Minister John Major about reports that Elizabeth should abdicate to her son Charles, given popularity polls at the time. The irony of that, knowing where we are today. And she had an issue with scenes that showed Charles begging Elizabeth to allow him to divorce Diana. I'm not there yet, but again, she thought that was not correct. The quote is saying, Dame Dench?
Dame, yeah.
Okay. Dame Judi, she said, this is both cruelly unjust to the individuals and damaging to the institution they represent. No one is a greater believer in artistic freedom than I, but this cannot go unchallenged. Have Netflix added? I thought I saw they had added the fictionalized drama. But in this article that I read, which was from 3 days ago, they said they hadn't. I should have Googled this before we came on. Let me do a quick, like, I mean, I don't think it damages the show for them to put a note at the beginning.
No, but people know it's a drama.
Yeah.
You're not tuning in and thinking, oh, this is what happened. This is exactly what happened. Do you know what I mean?
There's definitely someone who is like, this is what happened. Like, this is exactly it. I mean, I don't think it does any damage to the show. No, like, those people are probably not reading the opening credit. You know what I mean? Like, they're probably not reading every credit that comes up on the screen. I mean, I don't. Also, like, half that shit I don't read either.
People skip the intro anyway.
Yeah. It's too long. No. Do you watch it ever? Do you ever watch it? I'll watch it the first episode and then that's me done for the series.
Yeah, that's it. Once I've seen it once and I've heard those opening credits, I've heard the music. That's it. I'm not wasting those 15 seconds.
No. I know, yeah. It's literally a blip. So, there's nothing in it, but I'm like, absolutely not. There's this show I started watching. Did I actually talk about it on here? I can't remember, but we went away a couple of weeks ago and I was like, I need a show to watch on the plane. Like something easy that's not going to melt my mind. And I started watching Single Drunk Female. I don't know if you've seen it on.
Oh, I haven't.
I had never heard of it. It's on Disney Plus, I think. Yeah. And it's basically about this like 20 something year old girl who finds out kind of late in her 20s that she's like, oh shit, I'm an alcoholic and like I should probably do something about this. And it's about her kind of journey with AA and the people she meets along the way and the kind of bridges that she's burned and is trying to rebuild. It's funny, like it's a dark comedy. But the point I'm making is the opening intro is literally like the three, like Single Drunk Female, like popping up on the screen, and Disney Plus gives you the option to skip the intro, and I did it the first time thinking there was a really long intro and then I like skipped like a full scene and I was like, shit, where am I? I'm missing context to this. Where am I?
So, God, like, bless Disney Plus for doing that though.
You can get, yeah, they're like, let's save them that 1.4 seconds.
Exactly.
For the font, let's leave it go. We are going to really quickly touch on this because we're out of time and there's not a huge amount of back and forth on this because it's kind of a bit of a immovable story right now, but I wanted to talk about it because I feel like there's a lot of people who probably don't know who what's going on here or who this person is, and they might be just becoming aware of her, having seen her on kind of their feeds and things like this. And that's the Brittany Griner story that kind of broke this week, about her being moved to, what are they calling it? They're work camps, is that what they're calling it? I think that's
something along those lines, yeah.
Like work camps, right? So she's this is the story that broke this week. For a bit of context, she is a WNBA star from the US who is being held in Russia, and has just been transferred to a prison camp, somewhere in Russia. We're not aware of where that is, according to her lawyers who spoke out this week. She had been held in a pretrial detention center in Moscow since she was detained in February for carrying a small number of vapes or vape cartridges containing cannabis oil. She had been sentenced to a 9-year sentence, which was upheld last month. And there's obviously much talk from the US about how this is a kind of just a way for them to gain kind of political bargaining power over the US. They're saying that it's a trump up large scale drug smuggling. They're trumping up the large scale drug smuggling charges, sorry, against Griner, in order to seize her as a political bargaining chip. In these prison camps, inmates are obliged to work kind of sewing clothes, manufacturing other goods, including some tourist souvenirs. Prisoners are expected to work 8 hours a day, sometimes more, in really poor conditions. Some former prisoners are calling them sweatshops and other things that I don't want to say because it's people's opinions and it might not be whatever. They receive very little money for this kind of work. And most experts are saying that Griner won't be forced to do the same kind of labor that many other prisoners will, given the kind of public scrutiny that could have. Or could blow back on Russia and the damage that it could do is to her usefulness as a political bargaining chip. I know this is a pop culture podcast and we talk about entertainment and light stuff, but this is definitely a story that is seeping into that space, given just how shocking it is and given, I suppose, the other atrocities that are going on in Russia. This seems like a really scary situation, given that it's been going on now for quite a while. Like, February was the sentencing and still she is there, and there doesn't seem to be much movement on getting her out. But often, as we've seen with many of these situations, it can be a slow process to get these kind of prisoners of war and our prisoners in foreign countries, but especially out of Russia at a time like this.
It's so sad to read these updates on Brittany, and I think we have to remember as well, so she's a Black lesbian American. Everything is stacked against her right now. Like, she's completely helpless. She had less than a gram of cannabis oil.
Yeah.
It's mad. It's completely mad. And it's so unfair. It's horrifically unfair that she is literally being used as a pawn in this Russia-US political sphere.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's really scary. And this is just, like I said, the latest update on this. I will say there are tons of podcasts that go into the detail of her trial, her sentencing, where she is now, what the political kind of landscape looks like to get her out. So if this is something that you're kind of vaguely aware of, or a story that has kind of popped up on your feed, but you don't know the ins and outs of it, go and listen to a podcast. There's tons of explainers, 1-hour episodes or shorter, that would kind of give you a digest of what is going on, because it's really, and like you said, the fact that she is a part of so many minority groups in a country like Russia is very scary. So yeah, I just wanted to touch on that as a big update this week, but we'll move on to the lighter stuff again. Don't worry, we'll talk about some lighter stuff. Loves of the week, things that have brought us joy this week, that have made us smile. I will go first. It is today, let me triple check, the 13th of November. It's ready. It's time for Christmas, guys. I love an early Christmas. I love an early Christmas, Cindy. Are you an early Christmas person, or are you a December 1st or bust?
Oh, hey, there's no harm in it. There is no harm in it. There's the Baileys out. Get them. I've already started on the mince pies. So, you know what?
Are you a mince pie person?
I am. Okay. I love a mince pie. Hot or cold, custard, hot or cold. Yeah.
How do we feel about pudding?
Christmas pudding. Oh, yeah. I love it.
Do you? Oh, yeah, you love like a fruit dessert, like treat.
Oh, and a panettone. Oh, I'm here for it.
I'm okay with panettone. Yeah. I ease myself in. I like the early Christmas stuff, like the Christmas drinks in coffee shops and stuff, and like seeing an old turkey and cranberry sandwich. And I'm like, oh, that's a little change.
I love the Christmas sandwiches. Oh, I love them. They should be so a good whole year thing.
So I would be so up for signing that change.org. 100%. It should be a whole, or like the Christmas, like the crisps that they do around Christmas that are like, you know,
pigs and blanket.
I'm like, oh yeah, let's try.
I'm going to set up that petition tomorrow. I'm going to do it.
Yeah, let's do it. And then you can report on it for the Metro. You can be like, exactly. 1,000 sign change.org.
I can see it front page news.
This is it. Breaking tomorrow morning. Look out.
Get me my Pulitzer.
This is what we dreamed of when we studied journalism in college. It was stories like this. No, I love it. I love early Christmas. I love seeing like the ice skating rinks pop up. I love seeing all the little like fake snow and the igloos pop up for little boozy brunches and stuff. I love it. I'm like, I don't love all the pressure to buy presents. Like, I don't like that. The pressure. Yeah. That stuff, no. But all the environmental goodness,
the lead up to it, and also the Christmas lights.
Yeah,
I do love that aspect. But yeah, there is so much pressure, isn't there? There's always
there is,
especially like this year as well. It feels like
it's a different beast.
Cost of living crisis.
Yeah. Fuck it. It's a different year. It really is a different year. And I feel like, look, 13th of November for everyone like me who's still buying presents on like the 23rd of December. Now is a really good, I'm going to do it this week, I think. I say this every year and I'm like, I think I'm going to put in all my online orders this week and just be like, bish, bash, bosh, we're done and dusted. And I can fully enjoy being selfish then for the next however many weeks up until Christmas because I've done all of my prep work. I say this now, next week I'll probably have not a thing ordered. Like, not a thing. What have you been loving this week? Has anything brought you joy?
Yes. I'm going to have to go back to TV though. I have been loving Buying Beverly Hills on Netflix.
Oh my God, I'm so glad you brought this up. I totally forgot I was watching this week.
I'm obsessed. And I have my colleague Rishma to thank because she was the one who pointed me in the direction of Buying Beverly Hills. And I binged it. Okay. It's so much better than Selling Sunset and Selling the OC. Strong claim.
Oh my God, Sydney, I didn't even know. Oh my God, there's this whole world of conversation that I feel like we're going to miss out on. Okay, I have two questions. And I feel like you've answered one. Do you like Selling Sunset?
Yeah, I love Selling Sunset.
Oh,
sorry.
No, it's okay. You're allowed to like it. Don't feel bad. It just disappoints me so much. Like, so much. And are you a Housewives fan?
So, I have seen a couple of seasons of Beverly Hills.
Okay,
and Atlanta. I'm not up to date. I know bits and bobs of what's happening in Beverly Hills, but I'm like 5 seasons behind.
But you get the the importance of Mauricio and like what his character. Like,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm so with you. And I put it up on my Instagram, and so many people were like, "It's so boring," and like, "There's no drama." And I'm like, "Sorry. Firstly, show me the drama on Selling Sunset." Other than the one interesting storyline was that Christine was trying to poach clients with bribe clients. And then they were like, no, we're not discussing that anymore. I was like, why did you give us one good storyline and then you take it away? I was like, fuck this. So I'm like, Selling Sunset is not giving us like hot, like real estate tea. Okay. It's not. There's also all these stories about the houses not being really for sale and all that nonsense. Right. But like, whatever. Also, the two twins are the scariest thing I've ever seen. I can't with them. They're terrifying.
Jason.
Oh, I can't. They're terrifying. Buying Beverly Hills is so good because I actually feel like this is realistic office drama. Like, it's so like low bar stuff, but you're like, oh, I'd be so pissed if she did that. I love 100%. It.
Also, I have to say, the houses are next level. Like, they shit all over the Selling Sunset houses.
Oh, like, because what was Davina's wood and set? Was that like a 7.5 million?
No, well, she had one that was like, I want to say it was like 84 million or something that was absolutely insane. And that was like the biggest listing that they had.
And they were going crazy about like, you're never, was it? It was, yeah, what?
$75 million?
maybe 75. It was something like that. And then in the first episode of Buying Beverly Hills, it's like, oh, they're like, these are like little cottages to them. They're like, here is this plot of land worth 500 million. You're like, whoa, okay, we're talking big bucks.
I love it. I'm really, really hurt. But
go on.
I was kind of hoping to see Kyle in it some more. You know what I mean?
Is that presumably that's a contractual thing, right? Like, presumably that's like a...
Yeah, I would say so. Bravo have got her, haven't they?
Yeah. It's so interesting because I, when they announced this, I was really curious because obviously Mauricio, who is Kyle Richards' husband, owns the agency and he's kind of the lead, which again, delighted that he's in it because like Brett and Jason is in it a little bit, but Brett is like, I could not give a fuck about this television show. Yeah, I'm not partaking. Mauricio really, from what I've seen, I think I'm about four episodes in, he really partakes. I'm really surprised that Farrah is as vocal as she is, because on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, we hear Alexia. Alexia's kind of familiar to us. She's definitely more vocal. But Farrah is like mute. Like, she never talks on the Beverly Hills. So I'm really surprised actually that she's so, even
she's
in
like main character energy in Buying Beverly Hills. She's literally front and center along with Mauricio.
She's definitely getting a wedding special, right? Like when her and the fella get married, like they're definitely
100%, 100%.
Because like Paris is going to be her bridesmaid, like Paris Hilton.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I feel like there's going to be a whole episode dedicated to that. Oh, I just love it. I think it's also because there's so much nepotism in it.
Yeah.
It's just so funny to watch. You're like, oh, this privilege.
Yeah. I just enjoy it more than Selling Sunset just never clicked for me. Selling the OC, I enjoy. I like Selling the OC more than
Selling
Sunset.
OC was chaos.
Yeah, it was chaos. I liked it. And then all the Britney Snow stuff afterwards, which we discussed on here.
Oh,
I was like, this
God.
Is like.
I mean, she had to break up with him, right?
She had to break up. There was no choice.
It was like, I would be so humiliated if I were her. It was actually
It was like
level.
Even watching it, I was like, we're gonna be hearing about her. Like, there's no way she's gonna be okay with this. Like, there's just no way.
Publicly humiliated on that show.
Brutal.
Poor thing.
Brutal. No, and I like Buying Beverly Hills as well, because you do actually feel like you're I think Selling Sunset has drifted a little bit from the premise of the show being the real estate. And like, that's just the foundation. And there's all this other stuff to enjoy, like the office dynamics and all that kind of stuff. But I think so far from what I've seen of Buying Beverly Hills, they do a slightly better job of actually weaving the real estate stuff through all of the narratives. And I personally love real estate shows. I love a house tour.
Me too. Love I'm it. Obsessed with like property porn. So this show, and then this show has it in like bucketfuls, and the houses are next level. They are insane. And
oh my God, I'm so glad you brought
this up. No one should have that amount of wealth, but these houses.
But they do. it actually is sickening. And when they talk about the commissions, they're like, oh my God, they make so. Have you ever considered going into real estate? I have when I hear the commissions.
Like, I'll do a house tour. Like, oh, I need to go and get my broker's license. How hard can it be? Also, they always
is that even how it works here? Like,
they keep saying like, oh, 80% of realtors fail.
Why do they just not get good listings?
Yeah, I have no idea.
We are so dumbing down this job. Like, we're being so disrespectful to like hardcore real estate agents. We're like, how hard is it? Like, let me just get my license. I'll go out and sell a few houses, make a few million.
We could do it.
I think we could. I think we could. Look, I think I could do it. Like, let's see. I'm going to look into it just as a matter of interest. Mystery stories before we go. We spoke about I'm a Celebrity at length earlier in the episode. It got me thinking about like ultimate, because you hear these stories or questions all the time of like, who's your dinner party guests and all this stuff. I'm like, who is on your ultimate I'm a Celeb lineup? Have you got anyone that jumps to mind, or do you want me to give some examples first while you think it over?
I'm going to be really controversial.
Go on.
I think.
They have to be alive. That's the only thing. They have to be alive.
Okay, can I pick three?
Yeah, you can pick as many as you want. Yeah.
Okay, I think Gemma Collins.
Yeah.
She didn't have enough time in the jungle. She chickened out.
Why is she not doing All Stars? Why is she not doing it?
I have no idea. Maybe they tried to get her and she was like, "No, you're not paying me enough."
Actually, yeah.
I can imagine her doing that.
That's probably what it is. Okay, so Gemma Collins, who were the other two?
I'd love to see her. Kim Woodburn.
Oh, yeah.
Controversial.
Yes, Kim Woodburn would be so good.
Also, Katie Price.
Yeah. I remember watching that season on TV. Like, I was way too young to watch it, but I remember watching that on TV being like, this is the best. And she had like all the braids and like.
Yeah.
Perry Fatone. Oh, wow. Okay, so some of the suggestions that we got. Carl Pilkington, Maura Higgins, I'm presuming. Mickey Flanagan and Jen Shah, once she finishes her prison sentence. That's a Housewives reference, so you might get it. But I would agree that Jen Shah would be really good. Maura Higgins. I love Maura. I love Maura and what she did for Love Island and what she did for Irish representation in Love Island. But I think, I'm going to say it controversial, I think people hold her as like this, like the GOAT of reality TV. And I'm like, she's definitely top tier. But I'm like, what would, I don't know what she translate to other, like Ekansu is not going to be as good on Dancing on Ice. She's not. So
oh,
don't
I'm
get excited.
I'm so angry about that.
Such a disappointment.
Yeah. So such disappointing. She could have gone anywhere or done anything. Oh. Anyway. No, but yeah. Question. So the question that you asked just then, ultimate I'm a Celeb lineup.
Mates. Yeah.
So it wasn't All Stars, was it?
No, but I suppose your personal All Stars. Yeah, it doesn't have to be All Stars. It doesn't have to be past our campmates.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm trying
another
to think.
Suggestion was Maura Higgins, Stacey Solomon, Joanne McNally, and Lewis Capaldi. Joanne McNally, I don't know if you do you know who Joanne McNally is?
No,
she's an Irish comedian.
Oh,
so
okay.
Do you know Vogue Williams?
Yes.
Okay, so she does the podcast My Therapist Goes to Me with Vogue Williams. Sorry,
oh,
that's
I
an ambulance.
See.
Sorry, I live in the loudest apartment in the world. I'm so sorry. That was another one. Someone else said Ovi from Love Island, obviously. Daniel O'Donnell. Mm-hmm. I would watch Daniel O'Donnell in the jungle. Ros Purcell, she's an Irish influencer. Kelly Harrington, it's an Irish boxer. Sorry, these are very Irish focused. and then Lib Andrew. Oh, Love is Blind. Who's Andrew on Love is Blind? Andrew on Love is Blind. Is that the guy who put the eye drops in his eyes? Let me Google real quick.
Oh, from the new series.
Oh, Jesus, this series can... Did you watch Love is Blind?
I haven't watched this series. I haven't. Is it good? Is it worth me watching?
Yes, because I it's another one that I didn't enjoy from Netflix, Love is Blind. I just found it overhyped. I didn't feel like there was enough of a reward. This season has been really good. And it's just finished and the reunion has aired. So you can get, like, it's all there waiting for you when you're ready. So it'll
amazing.
Be good.
Amazing.
It'll be good. Final one, I'll say. This is a Housewives kind of heavy. Ramona from New York, Sonia from New York, Vicky from OC, Tamara from OC, Maura Montana. Oh, sorry, Maura, comma, Montana from Love Island. And then a bunch of sexy guys. Okay. Okay, cool. You've had time to think, who would you get in there? If it's not All Stars framed, who are you getting in?
I actually. Off the top of my head.
I want to cause chaos. Like, I want it to be.
Yeah, I want someone who's going to be really dramatic and actually give us some good TV. Who is going to do that for us?
Who's going to do that? There's no shortage, but it has to be the right kind of person, right? Like, I want, but don't want to see someone like Piers Morgan in there. I'm like, I want to see him with like someone who's like incredibly opposite of him. Like, I want to see, like,
yeah, 100%. Who could we put him with? Like, Alex Beresford again.
I should have thought this through as well before I come on here. I'm just going to Google celebrities.
I really didn't.
I'm going to Google celebrities and see what pictures come up.
Who would be a good campaign?
Cardi B could be funny.
Oh, she would be brilliant. She would be so funny in the eating challenges if she had to do it.
Can you imagine ITV trying to clear the budget to get Cardi B on?
They would have no budget left. It would just be her in the camp.
literally nothing. They'd be like, that's it. Sorry, guys. Ant and Dec, no salary for you this year. Yeah. David Attenborough would be good, wouldn't he?
Oh, he would be brilliant. He would be.
Oh, he would be good.
He'd be exempt from all the trials, though.
Yeah, he would. I'd give him a pass. I'd be like, just give us cute little stories around the fire pit.
Exactly.
Oh, who else? I'm going to think about this more and I'm going to put it up on Instagram, what I think. And you can do the same. Send him to me, Sydney, and we'll put up a little.
Yes.
We'll have a real strategic. I say this now, I'll probably totally forget to do this, but I'll try and remember. Sydney, I'm so gutted that we didn't get to talk about buying Beverly Hills more, but I'm glad that you brought that and we had that quick because I'm loving it. I need to go back and finish it now. That's
also you're the first person I've really spoken to about it. Oh. So I am glad to have finally got it out of my system about how obsessed.
It's so good. No, I'm so good. Sydney, I'm so glad we finally got to do this chat. Thank you for going through all of these stories with me. Stay strong over the next few weeks covering Matt Hancock in the jungle, because I know you're probably going to be like in a corner somewhere shaking by the end of it all.
Literally send thoughts and prayers.
That's all we can do. It's all we can do. Sydney Yates, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much to my guest, Sydney Yates, for joining me this week on the podcast. And thank you to you guys for tuning in each and every week. You can find us over on Instagram and TikTok at don'tquoteme.podcast. And you can also find us on all of your favorite podcast apps so you can listen whenever and wherever you like. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode and yes, all of the latest goss. We'll talk to you then.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.